Blog Talk Radio.
You think they really ready for you? Nah. You think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think?
To love and be loved. enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far over many lands and seas. He was very shy, and there was so much sadness in his eyes. But very wise, so wise was he.
Or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see
you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. Three, four. I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me wanna shout hallelujah. And I wanna
sing along.
Every voice and sing, till I didn't ever ring, ring with the harmony, oh, little team. Let our rejoice and rise high, burning with love, love has the joy to see.
Somewhere a child is waiting. Somewhere a child is waiting for you, and Unity Parenting and Counseling makes it possible for that child to be connected with his new family. Unity Parenting and Counseling will help you through the application process, training, and certification. Call Brenda Weatherspoon today at 312-455-0007 to be connected at the heart. Call 312-455-0007 today so that each day that child is closer to home.
Walking down the street now is a dangerous thing. There are drug dealers, crack houses, gang members, and crackheads. People fighting, cursing, and killing too. So much chaos, we don't know what to do. But if people only knew that they are hurting little children, if they could only see what our community could be. When in consultation, 1, stay calm. 2, try to say something positive. 3, tell the person what's on your mind. 4, ask if the person understands. 5, thank the person for listening if you can. Come on, y'all, let's be an example. It has to start somewhere. How about now? For more information on ways to prevent violent crimes, contact Totally Positive Productions at 773-488-9553.
Are you the parent of a troubled teen, or you just want to have a closer relationship with your child? If so, sign up for our free webinar called 5 Easy Tips to Effective Communication with Your Teen right now, hosted by teen expert Release Henry. Log on to successfulteenparenting.com/webinar.
tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Risen, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Risen offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Risen. Visit us online at phoenixrisen.com.
When were you last on an amazing vacation? I'm Tracy Lewis, leisure travel specialist with Pogo World Travel, and I'm here to tell you that you don't have to go it alone when planning the vacation of a lifetime. So the next time you're looking for expert advice on that perfect vacation, you've got Pogo World Travel every step of the way. Visit our website at gowithpogo.com today and find out why they say, go with Pogo World Travel and discover your dream of vacation come true.
In this, her first romance novel, State of Ecstasy, Jew Ephraim finds passion on the lush island of Martinique. Reminiscent of the works of Clépas and Lawrence, Jew Ephraim's rich emotional landscape delivers an achingly accessible complexity that makes State of Ecstasy steamy, provocative, and fresh, and its author a forceful new voice who brings an entirely new level of heat to romance. With her soon-to-be-released paranormal novel, Ephraim is giving us a brand new insight into this genre. Find her books on Amazon, iTunes, and wherever books are sold.
Do you hear that sound? Well, that's the sound of back pain. Are you tired of nagging and persistent back pain? Whether you're suffering from a chronic condition or a recent injury, don't fret. Chiropractic has proven to be a natural and holistic alternative to pain medications and surgical procedures. Visit Dr. Todd Tucker at our Water Tower location on Chicago's Magnificent Mile for a free consultation and exam. Call 888-535-2381 to get started with your personalized treatment plan. That's 888-535-2381. Call now.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Medrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as 20 bucks a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's
Show. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Good evening, everybody. You're now listening to the Jimmy Lee Underground Radio Network Show. Let me show you the way to go. That's my theme song this year. People tripping. Jimmy Lee, you can't change the world, Jimmy Lee. They gonna get you. Even if you win, the Democratic Party ain't gonna let you get away with that. You can't change establishment. Niggas and flies, boy. Niggas and flies. Niggas and flies. Now, it's not Black History Month. Nothing like that. So, I decided to play a couple of Black History cuts that I got on hold, or excuse me, on standby, of Rebels. Black Rebels, everybody. So let me go ahead and start it off with In Memory of the Great Dr. Lewis and Amos Martin. It's Joe Lewis and Amos Martin. Martin and Lewis. That turn, everybody.
Live humble yourself to deal and wrong. Live humble.
Born into slavery, a life of trouble and pain. Many things would eventually lead to the tragic Nat Turner Slave Rebellion. In the summer of 1831, Nat Turner led a slave revolt that sent shockwaves throughout the South. This bloody uprising created a great conflict for plantation owners and slaves alike. This potentially national-scale conflict sent a message to slaves everywhere that revolting would lead to a tragic compromise. At the time of the Nat Turner Slave Revolt, slavery was at its height. The North had abolished many of its slaves, but the South was still the world's greatest cotton producer, and abolishing slavery would ruin this. One slave child said, "I saw my mammy beat until she was just a living piece of raw meat." John Brown, a violent American abolitionist, said, "Slavery is the sin of America." Nat Turner was born in Southampton County, Virginia, on October 2, 1800. He was born into slavery on the plantation of Benjamin Turner. Little is known about Nat's childhood. He attempted to escape this cruel life a few times, but was never successful. Nat Turner was extremely religious. He even baptized himself in a local creek. He would pray every night to God, and even believed he spoke to God himself. Nat Turner even believed he was the Black Moses, and he was ready to lead his people out of slavery.
Well, take to an extreme the black slave interpretation of the Bible, and particularly the Old Testament. But if you look at the Book of Exodus, and you know, I mean, the story of the Hebrews escaping from slavery into freedom, which not surprisingly, was a favorite among African American slaves.
He really saw himself as Jesus' ambassador, as the Black Moses of the time.
31. There was an eclipse of the sun. Turner took this to be the sign that he had been promised, and confided his plan to the four men he trusted the most: Henry, Hark, Nelson, and Sam. They decided to hold the insurrection on the 4th of July, and began planning a strategy. However, they had to postpone action because Turner became ill. On August 21st, 1831, Nat Turner started his rebellion. That evening, Turner and six other men met in the woods. At 2 a.m., they went to the home of Nat Turner's master. They killed the master, the wife, and the children in the house. As they left the house and got a mile down the road, they realized that they had left a baby in his cradle. Henry and Will went back and killed the baby, while Nat and Nelson went on to the next house. The next house along the way was the Gills Reese house. Turner killed Reese, and he had a young slave woman named Cherry, who supposedly was Turner's wife. From this point on, Turner would go around and kill the families, and then recruit the slaves as a part of his rebellion. One example of this is the Catherine Whitehead house, also locally known as the Skikes house. There, he killed the family, buried them in the garden, and then recruited the slaves as a part of his rebellion. One story of survival was the Nathaniel Francis house, where slaves concealed Mrs. Lavinia Francis in the attic. Thus, her life was spared. On September 17, 1831, Governor John Floyd issued a proclamation for the reward and capture of Nat Turner.
This is a nightmare that they had even tried to rule out using the Fugitive Slave Act involved in the Constitution. Article 6 of the Constitution allows the U.S. government to use federal troops to put down slave rebellion. That tells you how much white Southerners feared slave revolt.
On October 31st, Ben Phipps, a local farmer, spotted and captured Nat Turner at gunpoint.
My name it is Pope Pilgrim, to pain and I am bound, traveling through this.
After, Turner was taken to the Southampton County Jail. There, he was appointed a lawyer, Thomas Ruffin Gray. Gray talked to Turner for days after he was captured. He then took it upon himself to write the Confessions of Nat Turner, a book read by most of the area at the time. In one instance, Gray asked Turner, "You know you're going to be hanged, right?" And Turner replied, "Was Christ not crucified?" This statement would be heard by most of the county and added to what the people thought of Turner. In the next couple of months, every rebel except Nat Turner was quickly killed or captured. During September and into October, nearly 50 accused rebels stood trial in Southampton County. Almost all were executed by hanging. On November 5th, 1831, Nat Turner was tried, convicted, and sentenced to death. The trial only took 48 hours. The man who said, "Was Christ not crucified?" was hanged on November 11th in Jerusalem, Virginia. Now known as Cortland, Virginia, his body was then flayed, beheaded, and quartered. In the bloody aftermath, close to 200 blacks, many of whom had nothing to do with the rebellion, were beaten, tortured, and murdered by angry white mobs. In addition, repressive policies were enacted for not only the enslaved blacks, but also many of the freedmen. No other slave uprising inflicted as severe a blow to the community of slave owners in the United States. Nat is, and will forever be regarded as a hero by many African Americans. Nat Turner finally became well-known in present-day life in the 1940s when historian Herbert Apfer published the first serious scholarly work on instances of slavery resistance in the antebellum South.
Oh, I smoothie in the air, you all know. It's where the gym along, Chelsea's on the go. Chelsea's all rise when the builders ring.
1968, William Strayton wrote a controversial book about Nat Turner, which won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction. This book was very controversial because many of the facts mentioned were actually false. Nat Turner was introduced once again into present-day life in the 1960s during the Civil Rights Movement. Nat was an inspiration for the leaders and for the followers of the movement. Malcolm X quoted Nat in many of his speeches and actions, using violence instead of nonviolent protest as Nat did in his rebellion.
Shine on me, shine until tomorrow, let it be.
In North America, but there were no successful slave rebellions in North or South America. Only in the Caribbean with the Haitian Rebellion do you see a successful slave rebellion.
In conclusion, Nat Turner created a huge conflict in which he ended up killing over 55 white men, women, and children. He recruited over 40 slaves as a part of his rebellion. With such a huge conflict, a compromise had to be met, but none was produced. The eventual compromise of the battle he was fighting would be the end of the Civil War. Nat Turner set the stage for all men to stand up for what they believed in, even if it was extreme.
Swing down chariots, won't you let me ride, oh,
swing down chariots, stop and let me ride, oh, rock me, Lord, oh, come and easy,
I got a home, I got a home.
In the words of Frederick Douglass,
the thing worse than rebellion is the thing that causes rebellion.
Only thing worse than rebellion is the condition that caused rebellion. Frederick Douglass.
They gonna get you, Jimmy Lee. You can't be starting this rebellion out here. They gonna get you. Put you in Jerusalem, Virginia.
Meg Evers.
In 1955, the death of Emmett Till was just one more reason for Medgar Evers to continue his work as a civil rights activist. He was the NAACP's first field representative in Mississippi. Having grown up in the Jim Crow South, Medgar was a man on a mission.
There were any number of things in his childhood that really made him acutely aware of the injustices. And as a young man who volunteered to go into the army to fight for his country in World War II, and then come home and find that he was still a second-class citizen, not being able to register and vote, he said, this has to change. And he decided that he would be a part of that change.
Evers fought for change in the racially charged climate of Mississippi.
Mississippi was considered the South Africa of America. It was like the most oppressive state, the most anger and fear and hatred and violence. And so his courage in the context of that state took on bigger than life meaning.
Medgar Evers, like so many black people whose families before them were raised in the South, actually loved the South. And they had this tremendous hope that things would change.
But as Medgar worked on the front lines of change, he placed his life in jeopardy.
Just working for civil rights in Mississippi, there's a strike against you.
You're a marked person. He knew that.
Medgar and his family lived with death threats. It was a life of barricaded doors and ever-drawn window blinds and safety drills for the children.
He taught them how to fall to the floor with the sound of gunfire and crawl to the bathroom, the bathtub, and always take care of their little brother.
Despite the dangers in early 1963, Evers began an active campaign to force the issue of racial inequality in Jackson, Mississippi. He organized demonstrations, went head-to-head with the mayor and the city's business leaders.
We were determined under Medgar's leadership to forge ahead, to crack the system. And they were determined to wipe him out because he was a leader.
On May 28, 1963, the NAACP began sit-ins at Woolworth's, where blacks were not served at the lunch counter. That night, someone threw a Molotov cocktail at Evers' home. Damage was minimal, but the message was clear.
The threat, the danger, made life so precious to us. Very seldom did we ever part without saying, I love you, and certainly without embracing each other.
Prophetically, at an NAACP gathering in Jackson on June 7th, Evers told the crowd, I love my children, and I love my wife, and I would die and die gladly if that would make a better life for them.
We knew. We held each other tightly a couple of nights before he was killed. And we both cried together. And he said, it's not going to be long. I said to him, I know.
On the night of June 12th, here in what was then the NAACP office, Evers watched with other movement leaders as President John F. Kennedy delivered an impassioned speech on civil rights.
We face, therefore, a moral crisis as a country and a people. We have a right to expect that the Negro community will be responsible, will uphold the law, but they have a right to expect that the law will be fair, that the Constitution will be colorblind.
Medgar was thrilled with the speech, and then met with his NAACP colleagues late into the evening. When their meeting was over, he drove home. In a nearby vacant wooded lot, a sniper crouched behind some honeysuckle. Mecca's car turned into his driveway. As Mecca stepped out of his car, he slammed the door shut.
We had made a pact that whichever one of us were driving, we would never get out on the driver's side because the driver's side faced this vacant lot, and we knew that it was a wonderful place to, for an assassin to hide. That night he was so tired until he got out on the driver's side.
Evers was shot in the back and fell to the ground. Megger and Murley's worst fears had come true.
I ran to the front door and saw him lying there and screamed. It was only then that the children left that area and came out to join me and asked their father, please get up, Daddy, get up, Daddy.
No longer a father, a husband, an activist, Megger Evers was now a part of history. Unlike the murders of so many before him, his death was not considered a lynching, but an assassination.
It was a real sign of changes to come that his body came all the way to Washington and his widow and little children went to the White House and that he was buried in Arlington Cemetery and accepted as somebody, as a martyr.
He must be looked upon as one who helped liberate and free the state of Mississippi, the South, and the nation. You know, he had many opportunities to leave, to do something else, but he decided to stay. And he paid a heavy price. He gave his life.
Sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do. You know, Megger Evers was trying to change the world. By registering people to vote. Now here in Illinois, they just passed a law that if you're 17, you can register to vote of this primary. But no one's talking about that. Here my man Megger Evers. Thank you, Ebony. Put his life on the line. But I'm going to keep on moving. That's how we do it. You know, I'm going to do it in the spirit of Megger Evers. You heard what Miss Evers said. Her and the children ran out there. Get up, Daddy. Get up. Can you imagine that? But That's why I'm running GOP.
They gonna get you, Jimmy Lee. Even if you succeed, the Democratic Party ain't gonna get you.
But I know the day we start to fight, the day everything will be all right.
All the dollars about to get,
hey.
And no money for to go down there.
Yeah.
So keep your eyes on the fight. Hold on, yeah. Hold on.
Republican, first of all, was because in 1950 I won the Republican nomination. I did not win the Democratic nomination. In 1952, I won the Republican nomination, not the Democratic nomination. And I felt out of loyalty to the party and won. But even more importantly, in Massachusetts, it was the Republican Party that had desegregated the National Guard. It was the party, I believe, much more progressive than was the Democratic Party. It was the party later on that the Democrats were supporting McCarthyism, for example. I was against McCarthyism. And the Republican Massachusetts Party were against McCarthyism. It was sort of a moderate wing of the Republican Party, and I think Republicans in Massachusetts are more moderate than conservative. Now, Barry Goldwater and along the line, a lot of that changed. The organization conservative took over more. But if I'm anything, I'm a moderate to liberal Republican. On social issues, I have to admit that I'm a liberal. There's no question in my mind about that. And I never deceived anybody about it. No one expected me not to be pro-civil rights or pro-women's rights or pro-civil liberties. And if they expected it, then they were sadly, grossly misreading me. I've never been anything but that. On other issues, on some economic issues and some things, I've always believed that man or woman should do for themselves what government and government should do only those things which man or woman can't do for themselves. And that was not a Goldwater statement. That was an Abraham Lincoln statement.
But I believe that the party should have a heart as well as a head and recognize the fact that there are things that people can't do for themselves, and therefore government must do it for them. But I don't like huge government. I have a conservative bent in that regard. I don't like huge government, huge bureaucracy. I believe in problem solving, and that's what I wanted to be, a problem solver.
I'm sure that...
Not bound by ideological, philosophical, or party constraints.
I'm sure that since most black politicians were Democrats,
yes,
that there was a fair amount of pressure put on you about being a Republican and why, and switching over and isolating yourself from the other black politicians. Was there, and how did you handle that?
Well, I've never isolated myself from black politicians. I am a Republican. I was elected as a Republican. I believe that most blacks are Democrats because they represent districts that, I'm talking about the Congress now, they represent mostly predominantly black districts. I mean, Adam Clayton Powell, the Abyssinian Church, the New York constituency, black constituency. And I could go on one run after another. When I went to Washington finally as the only black in the Senate, and I guess the first one to have ever been elected by popular vote, because the two senators who served from Mississippi in Reconstruction days were sent there by state legislature. It wasn't until the 13th Amendment was passed that senators were elected by popular vote. So the carpetbaggers put them in at that time, taking nothing away from them. One of them did serve a term. The other one, I think, only served a matter of months in the Senate. So when I went there, I used to joke that I could have my own caucus in a telephone booth because there was nobody there but me. Most of the congressmen and who were there at the time were Democrats and were constantly, of course, fighting the Republican administrations and whatnot. It was uncomfortable for them as well as it was for me. And then I wasn't in the House. I was not a part of it. I was in the Congress, but not in the House. I was in the Senate. And there was no other reason than that for not being a member of the Black Caucus. I don't remember ever being officially invited to join the Black Caucus, number one. But I would have had to give some thought about it because it was a democratic organization, pure politics. Forget the race, the racial issue. You're talking pure politics now. First of all, a work ethic. I'm a strong believer in the work ethic. I like to tell them what a teacher told me, that there are no shortcuts to glory. And when I use glory, I don't mean the frills and the ruffles. There's no shortcut to success, whatever that success may be. I'd like to reiterate what I was taught in early on. And I got that not just from my mother, but my grandmother, who used to say, remember your place now. And that disturbed me. And I knew what she was saying and why she was saying it. She was saying it to protect me also. And that's why I said, particularly the young black children, your place is anywhere you want it to be. It's left up to you. You make that decision. To young politicians, I want to make a plea for elective office. Seek power. There's nothing wrong with power if it's used wisely and used rightly. Power is essential. Power is what gets things going and it can be used for good as well as for evil. Some people think of power, the powerful person as being evil. I think it's the powerful person as being good.
Yes, yes, yes. Ed Brooks. Edward Brooks, Senator Ed Brooks. My man.
They gonna get you, Jimmy Lee. You can't be out there Republican. You're gonna poke the establishment. Oh, no.
Out there messing with my mind. So the lesson I'm trying to put out there to my Negroes all across America, and that's my new deal now. The nigger word is out. Negroes back in. Nah, we can't say black no more. Republicans are the new black, though. But nah. We got more done with these Negroes. Look at history. When we was Negroes, we got more things done. Do you agree, Dana? When we was Negroes, look at history. When the black man was a Negro, we got respect in this country. What happened to the word Negro? You have the blue room, Dana. You can speak now.
Hi, Jimmy.
What's going on, Dana? But, you know, I was saying, hold on before I say what I was saying.
Well, okay, Jimmy,
Chance,
I think
did you hear the Ed Brooks little piece I played or any other pieces that I played?
No, you're not going, Dave. I heard some of it. I didn't hear it all.
Well, not. But what you heard, what do you think about what you heard? If you said you heard. And then if you didn't hear it, I can just ask you this. Don't you think that is... Go ahead.
See, I don't agree with... I think that when you change the names of what we're called as minorities, I think it creates a problem longitudinally in terms of when we research our history. You know what I mean?
Move from Negroes to Afros. And then we were just designed by our hairstyle. And then we went from Afros to Africans. And now, you know, there's a lot of white South Africans out there, white Africans that can be African Americans too. But I'm just saying, when you look at all the great speeches that Martin hey to the baby in the background. When you look at things like Martin
he says the baby says Jimmy Lee to DC.
That's right. I'm here. Jimmy Lee love the babies. Jimmy Lee love the babies. We look at great speeches that all the great orators have spoken, even from Paul Robeson on up, the Enlightenment period and the advancement period for blacks. We got a lot done with Negroes. And if you heard Martin Luther King say the Negro man was doing this and that, you wouldn't take it negative, would you? Or Max or Cottage Woodson or those people that I'm speaking of. Or Megar Evers. Well, if they say, if by them calling, then it's equivalent to nigger. Totally different. I'm not saying nigger and Negro are the same deal, but I'm just saying, is it a wordplay? Do you feel that we got a lot done with those Negroes? We have been African American. Black folks advance in civilization more as Negroes than African Americans. I'm just joking. You ain't got to answer that, Dan. I ain't going to put you on. I'm not going to put you on the spot. But I have good news that...
What's the good news?
I got good news that Edmund's telling me that my friend, your friend, Sean, his mother should be doing well, and he's out of the hospital. I think he was ill. He got some bad chicken. El Poco Loco, something like that. He went to the El Popo. Edmund got a hold of some bad chicken. So we hear that he's out, and... Listen to Sean, you know, hope you are, good. Welcome back. That's all I got to say. Hope your mother and everybody is straight, you know, stuff like that. But no, then I was playing Ed Brooks and why he was a Republican and what made him decide to join the party. And when I played it earlier, you know, not me earlier, like a couple of years ago when I first played it, it didn't have as much meaning to me as it has now. Like, why is Republican? Like, he received a Republican nomination because Republicans elected him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, excuse me, same here.
Uh-huh.
And like him, I do feel that the Black Caucus is strictly pure politics. I don't believe that they are mobilizing, organizing to get any issues for Black America. Because here we have a black president and black unemployment is the highest in the nation. You have black
children. But I don't understand, Jimmy, what does that have to do with anything?
Let me tell you what that has to do with
it. Unemployment for African Americans has been high forever.
Explain to you what it has to do with anything.
Get a black man on a black president. That's ridiculous.
Educate you what it has to do with anything. If you're the black caucus, then you will come up with a bill or some legislation that you put on the president's desk so he can sign. You will bring
forth. That's the thing. He's not the president of the black people. He's the president of the United States of America.
How about this? There's something called an immigration reform bill out there because the Spanish want immigration reform. There's something about a gay rights bill out there because gay rights had a lobbying legislation out there moving things.
There's a Hispanic reform bill.
The Lilly Ledbetter law.
Dana. Because America was profiting on the backs of Hispanics, and not giving them rights.
The same thing
for the gay people. You know what I'm saying? We need equality for all.
I'm not.
Black people need equality too. But I tell you what, the first thing to change is the Civil Rights Act, the Constitution that still says that we're not even a whole person.
I agree with you on that, Dana. But
the point for equality for black people, we need to change these things that are allowing us to be treated unequally.
But
these antiquated views of people that exist in this world, they need to change. They need to go.
I liken to the days of Noah, so comes son of man. So I hear what you're saying, but this is the point I'm coming from, Dana. That we're saying almost the same thing, but the point I'm coming from.
Has nothing to do with a black president, Jimmy. Is what I'm saying. That has to do with an unequal society.
One and I'll get you to three.
No, it's not one and one. One has nothing to do with the other. In the entire history of the United States, black people have been here for what? How many hundreds of years? And in the entire history of the presidential elect, then we have one. We have one of one. And then all of a sudden, he's supposed to be the Messiah for black people. Well, no. He's supposed to be the president of the United States.
Okay,
he's
Dana.
He's got to be the president of the United States, and that means for all people. That's what I'm saying.
Unless okay, Dana,
we can
let's go
get
all
rid
people.
Of antiquated view.
Let's go off your view.
Dana. Regarding race, then it's not going to work.
Before we go big words, let's go here. When the Hispanic caucus wanted a law and issue passed, they caucused up and put a bill for the president.
But when, Jimmy, the people that are of Hispanic origin, needed a bill because let me tell you something. Anytime they can be hired to work on a farm, the laws of this country say there is no limit to the amount of hours that they have to work. There is no minimum to the amount of money that they have to be paid.
Now, I hate to put you in the blue room, Dana, because I want you to just jump in, but I'm in the blue room. I ain't going to deal with immigration. Let's go to Lilly Ledbetter. So would you agree that because of Lilly Ledbetter law, equal pay for women is justly a great law that the president signed when he signed Lilly Ledbetter law? We made that to law? I'm quite sure you agree about that, don't you?
Again?
Of course you do agree. That's because the caucus is a caucus.
I didn't say I agree.
No, because the caucus got together and decided they want a bill passed, and they got it passed for equal pay for women. Now,
if they want to put some bills on the table, why don't they put a bill on the table that gives military members rights and the rights and protection from the laws that they are risking their lives?
Dana, now here we go again. Like you said, antiquated laws. People looking at people funny. Like into the days of Noah, so I'm coming to Son of Man. The point I'm coming at is this, Dana. That even all these states, with the new marriage laws being passed, that's because a certain population caucus their politicians to get what they feel is a part of America. Before I bring in Dana, you're in the blue room, Dana, so I hope you ain't talking to yourself. Now, back to the black caucus. There has not been a whimper, a stir. We said equal rights. Voting Rights Act of 65 has gotten pushed back. Now, that was the equal rights Now, what does that have to do with the price of butter? A lot. There's a lot of pressing issues. There's jobs acts. There's jobs bills. HBCUs can get funded. There's Pell grants. There's small things. No one's saying because a black president in office, blacks should get things. I'm saying there's a black president in office, and blacks should get things. Because I ain't a nobody. So somebody is saying that since we got a black president in office, we should get things. When evangelicals had a president in office, there's a lot of faith-based money going around because they elected George Bush. Nobody's asking for the world. Everybody's asking for opportunity. Now, Dana, it's on you. Dana? I'm done.
Jimmy, can you hear me?
Yes, you're out the blue room now.
First of all, let me say I'm very sad. My New Year resolution was that I would not be blue roomed, at least till June, and I didn't make it to the first pass, the first week in the New Year. What was that saying, Jimmy?
They say all resolutions last only 7 days, and I guess you could have made it out.
I made it for 7 days. Jimmy, the thing about it is that there are laws that are creating disparities in our society against minorities. And I'm not talking about just African Americans when I say minorities.
No,
I'm talking about women. I'm talking about Hispanics. I'm talking about anything that is a minority in this country. There are laws on the books that are creating disparities.
No, Dana. There has never been no laws that prevented no race of people outside of blacks to vote. There has been no laws. Only black people in America are the only race, only creed, and only color in this country that there are laws that you can research that was put on the books just purposely so that you just said it yourself. We're not even on the books as a man. Every other minority, I guarantee you.
The Constitution was signed in 1787. The Constitution was signed back in 1787.
No, because we're not even a whole man. Dana, a woman, listen, women are looked upon as a whole. Hispanics are looked upon as a whole. LGBT.
That's what I'm saying. So before you mention that there is a black president that is not giving rights to the blacks, the first thing we need to look at is why in the world would the Constitution of the United States not even consider us to be an entire person?
Dana,
why not consider us to be a whole human being?
I know who can answer that question. I'm about to bring him in right now.
Why is it that the Equal Opportunity Rights, the Equal Rights Act that was signed by President Lyndon Johnson in 1964, why doesn't it create equality?
Hey, that was a good question.
An Equal Rights Act, that a Civil Rights Act that allows people to be treated uncivilly.
Hey, Dana,
it's an oxymoron.
I'm gonna answer that question for you.
So,
Dana, I'm gonna ask a question for you right now, because if a woman want to be equal to a 3/4 man, then let her go on ahead. A 3/4 black man, let her go on ahead. If a Hispanic coming over here and want to be equal to a 3/4 man, so be it. If LGBT want to be equal to a 3/4 man, so be it. All I'm saying is that in this country, they didn't have no laws that say homosexuals, you cannot come in my bar and spend your money. They didn't have laws that say if you're homosexual, you cannot stay in my hotel. There was no laws like that. There was no laws on the books that said if you're a woman, you cannot eat at this restaurant.
I don't care.
So what is your solution, Jimmy?
What I am saying is this. Right now, in the next 3 years that we have this black president in office, that these black politicians start demanding things, because every other race, every other ethnic, every other creed or whatever they want, every other new wave American getting things and getting benefits. They're slowly, our benefits and rights are slowly being erased, and no one is speaking up. And when someone speaks up,
we're looking at wrong arguments. Because me, as an African American, is judged based on the fact that I'm black on a daily basis. And so somebody being sex gay, somebody being allowed to marry because they're gay, I feel that anyone that decides to marry should be allowed to marry. We
that
need equality in this world. We need equality in this world, and it can't be based on what somebody looks like, who somebody's religion is.
Marriage does not make nobody equal. Marriage is somebody equal, make them whole as a whole man. That's make them somebody equal.
What I'm saying to you is that you can't.
No, because you cannot put gay rights and civil rights in the same boat, because a homosexual always get a job. A homosexual always go to a restaurant. A homosexual always go to a hotel. It was not literally homosexual because they laughing at somebody or they dating somebody. You see nobody being listed for homosexuality or sodomy. You didn't see that. So what I'm saying is, when someone wants to jump on and say that, no.
Men and women are sodomizing each other. What are you talking about?
Why did it drop a bit homosexual?
You can't judge somebody based on who they
are. In America, America has never judged nobody on sexuality, only on race. They only made laws. They never made laws against no one's sexuality, only on your race.
The
history of your books always say you're black.
The right to choose.
Homosexual never fought for the right to get their right to vote. You never saw nobody, you never saw no homosexual march for the right to vote, why they had it. You never saw no homosexual march for the right to sit at a restaurant, they had it. Right for an equal job, they had it. Right for equal pay, they had it. What right did the only right that they're mad that they have was being married, so they feel they being oppressed? No. Marriage don't mean nothing. So what I'm saying is, if they want to jump on with it, they can jump on it. It don't mean nothing. When you look at the overall scheme of things, they can always get a job. They can always vote. They can always own property. They can always get all the best things. They was never discriminated against what? Because they couldn't marry? No. Blacks couldn't even vote.
Go
to a restaurant, damn it. Couldn't even.
Jimmy.
Couldn't even go to a bathroom.
As African Americans.
I mean, white women and homosexuals can always go to bathrooms in this country. They can always vote in this country. I mean, after 1919, they always can vote in this country. They always own property in this country. But they can never say it's the same. No. Pushing blacks to the back. That's all they're doing, pushing blacks to the back, because it's not the same thing. Because blacks don't argue over our rights of marriage. Oh, I didn't get married to be equal to the... We never march to say, can I get married? We never march for the right to marry.
Let her finish, Jimmy.
What I'm saying to you is this. As people who have been oppressed, you don't preach oppression, because I can't say I want to be equal but treat somebody else unequal. What I'm saying is, if we're going to, and Sean, welcome back. I'm glad to know you're doing okay.
Thanks.
What I'm saying to you is this. If you want equality, if you want this society to stop judging you based on what you look like, then you need to stop finding reasons to judge others. I don't have any beef with somebody that's different than me. I don't care what race they are. I don't care what.
It's not about beef, Dana. It's not about being homophobic or
anything. You know why? Because
it's about
that we all deserve equality. We deserve equality. Why? Because we're human beings.
Who's that?
And
never
nobody has any
equality
right to judge
in this country.
Anyone else?
Inequality in this country. You have never saw homosexuals say, I can't get a job because I'm gay. I can't vote because I'm gay. I can't own property. You have never saw them saying, we have never saw them marching for none or protesting or no.
Hey,
America is the only, in America is the only, the black person is the only race that had laws assuring that there will not be equality. And if homosexuals feeling that marriage will make them equal, make
you can't say be biased and then say I want people to not be biased against me.
Listen, look how whole they can be made easily by saying just marriage makes them equal to the American. And we're so far behind, we ain't been whole yet. We ain't been whole yet, and we gonna wait for everybody to, okay, now they got their marriage, now they're equal, okay. Now Spanish immigration, okay, all y'all are straight. Now, can we be made whole yet? Can we argue about that yet? Because we're still being pushed back because we want to make sure somebody get married or make sure somebody can come in this country take a job from us. I mean, can we be made whole at one time with a black president at once?
How are we making sure that somebody can come and take a job from us?
If black unemployment is high, and if you're coming out of jail and you can't get a high-paying job, and you're letting a bunch of immigrants come in get the low-paying jobs that a low-skilled paying person can't get, that somebody out of jail can't get, then you're taking a job from somebody who can't get a real job because they got a felony report but can't watch dishes no more. Can't get a landscape no more.
But right now, ain't nobody got jobs. You got to come up with a new argument on that. Nobody got jobs.
Can't even be a cab driver no more. Can't even braid hair no more. Can't even be a housemaid no more. Can't get none of that.
But what does that have to do with the immigrants, Jimmy? Those immigrants are here working
no,
hard.
They go home. We can't go home. If anything goes wrong,
they can't go home either because this is their home.
As an immigrant, if we can send them back, that means they're not from here. If we can go back, if you can go back to your mama, go back to your grandmama, take this money that you're making here and send it back home because your mama, grandma, auntie, not your 10th grade, your great, 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 great. No, but your grandma, that means your mama's mama or your mama. No, what I'm saying is this right here, that because of immigration laws that are so loosened, not only blacks but whites, but Americans who are impoverished right now cannot get a low-paying job that's coming out the pen every day. Now, I go here with these new drug laws that they're passing now by decriminalizing marijuana. They're going to have a bunch of people come out of jail. Now, where can they work at? Now, all they're going to do is flood the numbers of unemployed blacks in the streets. Why? Because we got to let these immigrants in here to get these jobs. And I go here. Let's not even talk about the Mexicans. Let's talk about the Asians and the Chinese getting these high-paid jobs that these college graduates can't get because you give them the immigrants over here with their outstanding visas. Now, they get them tech jobs that MIT can't get, that Harvard can't, that Howard can't get. They can't get the jobs neither. Let's look at it on the whole. Let's just look at the Mexicans. Let's look at everybody on the whole. You got kids coming out of college can't get no jobs because the immigrant got it. You can't get a telemarketing job no more because the immigrant got it. What I'm saying is it ain't just got to be, let's look across the, let's look at the poor.
But Jimmy, that's not a problem with immigration. That's
it is a problem with immigration by letting.
That's a problem.
Want somebody to come in here by not registering and saying that they are here, then that's a problem. If we have laws on our books that say, if you come across here, we must know you are here, and you're not doing that, that means you're purposely violating our laws. That's a problem. We can't say, okay, well, we're going to let you slide because, hey, yeah, we know it's bad over there. Well, hell, it's bad over here. That's a problem.
Well, for one, we're not studying to go to med school. I mean, I'm seeing, I go to the doctor all the time, and I don't see none of us as MDs. So you let the foreigners in because we're not doing a good job at that, man. I mean, all the medical industry as MDs, brother, as MDs. So you gotta let the foreigners over here on that because they the ones that got to take care of us because we're not doing nothing about taking care of ourselves.
Your mind be broad and vast. Don't you know how many? There's more doctors in Cuba. Being a doctor in Cuba is like being an alley mechanic. There's so many doctors in Cuba. Being a doctor ain't nothing.
Well, you know,
brain surgeons and medics coming out of Cuba, doctors left and right. So what I'm saying is to teach medicine, I'm not saying it ain't that hard, but I'm not saying it should be stopped. It should be cultivated and produced here in America. We can produce all this great talent here in America and get America back working and sourcing things can do here. We even outsource the telemarketing on the
phone. Well, look, they offer free scholarships at Central State for science at one time, right? How many people took it? How many people took it except for the foreigners? None of us niggas did it. Niggas wanted to tap dance and be an entertainer. None of us took that degrees. I mean, or free education. I mean,
I asked a couple of homies that took it. Matter of fact, one of the motherfuckers designed a robot arm to go out there now.
Well, how many?
Know.
One? You can count on your hands. I mean, we.
And
we
my
people,
homie,
we don't, we don't
you
even,
know, I was in Wesley. You know what I'm saying? He was out there. You know, that's my man.
What I'm saying, it should have been hundreds, at least thousands of us.
That goes back to our educational system where we need to gear our children to those things because we need to start gearing up for the future instead of outsourcing it. That's the point I'm saying. We need to gear up our education system and make sure we provide those people that can provide. Listen, healthcare is a big business now. Now we should be flooding the school marketing industry with new nurse practitioners, doctors, med students right now because it's a big business now. That's what I'm saying. We don't need to outsource that. I mean, back to our immigration policy.
But if
Haitians in, nobody should come in. How about that? You know what I'm saying? If Haitians can't come over here, then nobody should come over here.
It's larger than that. It's even larger than that now. They're selling off the country. I mean, I was reading the newspaper the other day. They didn't authorize people to get the chip now, okay? Within 5 years, Americans are supposed to be offered this chip, right? It's going to be tattooed on you or not. This was in the newspaper. I couldn't believe it when I seen it, all right? So, I mean, it's larger than what you're talking about. I mean, from my understanding, countries are buying up our debts, and if they buy up your debt or your debt, say for instance you own a student loan and some Arab guy buys up your debt, right? Well, if he says he wants his money, you don't got it. Well, you have to do guillotine. I mean, well, from my understanding, limbs gonna get cut off. You belong to that person now or belong to that country or whatever. Are you hearing me?
Well, that's what I mean. That's where you need to stop
our immigration
policies right there so shit like that won't happen.
Go ahead.
No, I mean,
we're not talking about stuff like that. That's real.
I'm saying is right now, you going back to our immigration policy, we're letting foreigners come in here and buying up America, and we need to be thinking about America ourselves, point being like that. Whether you're black, white, well, you're Puerto Rican, that's part of America. You know what I'm saying? You just, right up here, you got to be thinking about right here and start pushing our factories. If Mexico want to be up in here, then they should go in there and say, we want to be part of America's sovereignty. Call it a goddamn day. Call it a day. You know, call it a day. We cannot be losing. If you can come out, and I'm talking about, when I say out the jails, I know most of y'all imagination thinking I'm talking about men. What about a million women in Philly prisons coming out of jail can't get a job flipping a sheet at Best Western? You know, can't even get a job flipping it. Why? They're not going to put in a cash register somewhere at some PC somewhere because of a felony. Can't even get that job. Can't even go wash no dishes now. Can't get that job.
You're
now.
Right. I admit, you're right. All right.
So when people think about prison, you're looking at men. There's a bunch of women out here that do the same little job, can't get the small jobs that black women used to get that didn't have a high level of education or something like that. They're going to somebody that you can threaten INS on them. I'm calling INS on you. Better shut up, lady. And it's slavery. So instead of coming back home so a black person get a job, you said let's free them so the black person stay broke. All I'm saying is, I expect blacks to get something right now because right now, it's the sound.
I mean, what do you expect us to get? Some money? I mean, what?
Rights of protection. Let me give you an example. The interstate commerce laws gave us so much rights protection that that didn't say, you know, free to slave. That said, man, you can't stop from going nowhere. That's just that one little law made us able to walk sit in Walmart. Because it's interstate commerce law. That means they told everybody, yeah, you own a private business here. Yeah, how about this? Instead of us saying, it's your private business. If you're doing commerce interstate-wise, you got to have somebody black in. I mean, just that law alone, change the system. You know, it didn't tell World War, because World War was right. I'm a private industry. I serve who I want to serve. But if you want to do business intercommerce-wise, that means it didn't come to your motherfucking store through the Intercommerce Highway, you best her. I mean, just laws like that. One small law. One small law.
You said commerce laws.
State commerce law. I mean, look it up, man. You know,
so
it,
no, I understand. I think I understand what you're saying.
I'm saying,
I think
so,
I understand.
Little things like that. You ain't got to go big. You ain't got to take a sledgehammer and go swing at no fly. You know what I'm saying? It's strategic. It's tactics. Playing the game. And we don't play the game because we were taught not to play the game. And when, if you're taught not to play the game, you should go learn the game and play the game. And like Dana was saying, I mean, equality, yeah, everybody want equality. But when it comes to black equality, we should be scared to scream black equality right now, because, like you said, if we still 3/4 of men with a black president right now, that should be a fucking problem.
No, we need to find out who is this 3/4 of a man. Who are they talking about? We need to find out for certain.
Right now.
You know.
Right now, see, there's things that you can do that is not going to affect everything. You can do small things that help all things. You know, I mean, like I said, I ain't hating on homosexuals. They ain't got nothing to do with it. But their rights and their fight has nothing to do. Same with immigrants. Their rights and their fights has nothing to do with us. Because we can go back to Africa. If they want to do a raid on us, we're going to send us back to Alabama, Mississippi. They can go right back. They can go right back home. Right back home. You know, we can't go home. This is our home. We can't be deported. We can't get that. But we're going to sit here and let some people come over here and make sure we stay permanently underclass. Permanently. We're going to say, fuck it, we're going to give all our rights we fought for right now, the last 50 years, just because we feel for you. Permanently. We ain't enjoyed these rights. We ain't had these rights for 100 years yet. We ain't been free 100 years yet. You know, and I'm saying, if homosexual, LGBT, if giving them the right to marriage makes them equal, God bless them. Then they can be equal. Then now they're whole. Now we can deal with making a black man whole now. That's about it. If that's all it took. To calm everything down, now that everything calm, hey. You know, because what does marriage mean anyway? What does it mean anyway? What does it mean anyway? You know what I'm saying? So, the day I see somebody get hoes just so they can eat at a restaurant or sit at a hotel or to ride on a Greyhound bus, to use a bathroom, drink out a water fountain, until somebody say, yeah, that happened to me too. And come on. No, hanging for laughing at somebody. Hanging for looking at somebody.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, right. Nah.
I mean, some would say that's what messes up in the first place. Always wanting to be like somebody else. We was good when we was separate but equal. Go ahead.
It was good, like I said, we're separate but equals. We was Negroes. You know what I'm saying? We want to go downtown. I mean, like I said, marriage does not make you equal. It does not make you equal, period. You know, ain't nobody performing a ceremony with Adam and Eve. They just kicked it, period.
Hey, well look, I seen this thing when y'all talked about Chicago is the next bankrupt something. I didn't mean to take y'all off topic. Dang, where
yeah.
Dana at?
Either she's still there, she's holding on. I guess,
I'm here.
She's not in the blue room.
Uh-oh.
She's spanking a baby. She's scaring some little baby over there. Yeah, a little baby over there making faces at some baby. Go on in, Tom.
I'm here, Sean. Don't pay no attention to Jimmy. He like being mean to me.
I was talking to a brother who was from Detroit, and he was saying that Detroit is so bad that in some neighborhoods got taken over by the dogs, the animals. You know, there's nobody to tame the dogs. The dogs and took over some neighborhoods. It's so bad up there.
Right.
You
yeah,
know?
Like in packs, man. Yeah.
Yeah, and talking about the neighbors have to be on 24-hour. They have to take sleep patrols.
The dogs.
You know,
yeah.
Just.
Yeah, people
just,
roaming
just,
the street
just,
while it be like
right.
The dogs just let them go.
And the neighbors have to be on sleep patrol, like, you guard this time, because that's how bad the crime is. You know, they don't let it get to that point. Well, he was talking about how, and I just like that lady here, when a month ago before I got taken away, when she was on here talking about, like, they're letting the neighborhoods fall down so that eventually they can move those black folks out and rebuild again for the white. And it's making a lot of sense, and I'm saying is they're going to do that to Chicago.
It happened already.
They already did it. They already did it. It's called regentrification.
Okay.
Now the plan is called New Chicago, and New Chicago is no Negroes. That's it. Because we got a black, nobody can't get nothing done there. And his boy Rahm Emanuel is making sure that he put out. You know, they had to fight. They had to fight Rahm Emanuel to make sure they close schools. Like, man, here it is. You tell him. You got news reports saying, don't go out. Don't spend 5 minutes outside. But kids got to walk like 5 blocks to go to school. You know what I'm saying? And they wouldn't go close no schools. You know, like I said, Michael Jackson said, all I really know is that they don't really care about us. And we should not be ashamed to say, yo, Obama, can you make sure that the Voting Rights Act of 1965, that was a law that enacted to make sure blacks have the right to vote? Because, you know, every other race, creed, and color had that right. But blacks, you can become a legal alien back in the 50s, come over and get your papers and still vote. You can be any. What? I mean, they had the right to vote before we had the right to vote. I mean, I'm just saying.
I had to agree with Tianke on this, that Obama's not African American. He's
he
not.
Is. His father's African.
His father's African, right? True. He is African, but he's not a black. He's not a black American.
What I'm saying is, it's a different ballgame. He's an African American. Like I
true
said,
that.
We got more done with his Negroes before we became African Americans. You know, I'm just saying. The African American has not gotten anything but pain and suffering and stopped protesting.
But at least he is showing some care. I mean, he could be heartless like your boy. What's that Republican black guy? The Colonel? What's his name? He could be heartless like that.
I don't know. What heartless black guy? The one that made sure Africa got all that money and all those rights and benefits. And
Colonel, what's his name?
I don't know. General
Powell. No, the black. No, you know what's this guy's name?
This
retired black colonel. He's a Republican congressman or something like that.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
With the crew cut, I mean, with the box cut.
Scott.
Huh?
West.
You know him, Jimmy. West. He could be heartless like that guy, right?
But
Obama's not, huh?
Matter of fact, know something. I'm gonna play. Y'all don't know if you heard my man Ed Brooks. You hear me? I play a little Ed Brooks on here about the Republican Party. You hear me? Let me do an extra for you right now.
The Republican, first of all, was because in 1950 I won the Republican nomination. I did not win the Democratic nomination. In 1952 I won the Republican nomination, not the Democratic nomination. And I felt out of loyalty to the party and won. But even more importantly, in Massachusetts, it was the Republican Party that had desegregated the National Guard. It was the party, I believe, much more progressive than was the Democratic Party. It was the party later on that the Democrats were supporting McCarthyism, for example. I was against McCarthyism. And the Republican Massachusetts Party were against McCarthyism. It was sort of a moderate wing of the Republican Party, and I think Republicans in Massachusetts are more moderate than conservative. Now, Barry Goldwater and along the line, a lot of that changed. The organization conservative took over more. But if I'm anything, I'm a moderate to liberal Republican. On social issues, I have to admit that I'm a liberal. There's no question in my mind about that. And no one ever, I never deceived anybody about it. No one expected me not to be pro-civil rights or pro-women's rights or pro-civil liberties. And if they expected it, then they were sadly, grossly misreading me. I've never been anything but that. On other issues, on some economic issues and some things, I've always believed that man or woman should do for themselves what the government and the government should do only those things which man or woman can't do for themselves. And that was not a Goldwater statement. That was an Abraham Lincoln statement. But I believe that the party should have a heart as well as a head and recognize the fact
that there are things that people can't do for themselves, and therefore government must do it for them. But I don't like huge governments. I have a conservative bent in that regard. I don't like huge government, huge bureaucracy. I believe in problem solving, and that's what I wanted to be, a problem solver.
I'm sure that...
not bound by ideological, philosophical, or party constraints.
I'm sure that since most black politicians were Democrats,
yes,
that there was a fair amount of pressure put on you about being a Republican and why, and switching over and isolating yourself from the other black politicians. Was there, and how did you handle that?
Well, I've never isolated myself from black politicians. I am a Republican. I was elected as a Republican. I believe that most blacks are Democrats because they represent districts that, I'm talking about the Congress now, they represent mostly predominantly black districts. I mean, Adam Clayton Powell, the Abyssinian Church, the New York constituency, black constituency. And I could go on one run after another. When I went to Washington finally, as the only black in the Senate, and I guess the first one to ever been elected by popular vote, because the two senators who served from Mississippi in Reconstruction days were sent there by state legislature. It wasn't until the 13th Amendment was passed that senators were elected by popular vote. So the carpetbaggers put them in at that time, taking nothing away from them. One of them did serve a term. The other one, I think, only served a matter of months in the Senate. So when I went there, I used to joke that I could have my own caucus in the telephone booth because there was nobody there but me. Most of the congressmen and who were there at the time were Democrats and were constantly, of course, fighting the Republican administrations and whatnot. It was uncomfortable for them as well as it was for me. And then I wasn't in the House. I was not a part of it. I was in the Congress, but not in the House. I was in the Senate. And there was no other reason than that for not being a member of the Black Caucus. I don't remember ever being officially invited to join the Black Caucus, number one. But I would have had to give some thought about it because it was a democratic organization, pure politics. Forget the race, the racial issue. You're talking pure politics now.
Hello?
Uh-huh. I'm here.
No, we're not playing that again was because, you
no,
know.
No, let's not play that again, please, though.
Play that again. You know, I played it. We're not playing it again.
What?
So, insight on why I was ranting and raving about what the Black Caucus doing now. Like he said, it's pure politics. It's just to be saying we're here and there when there's pressing issues that's going on.
It's just
on,
to
right?
Take a picture. It's just to take a picture. That's a photo op. That's all. That's it.
Because if the Black Caucus didn't let Detroit fall, that's a black city. And they didn't do nothing and they scream at the president, hey, president, can you send some refund sources fund? You say the auto industry, can you make sure that money go back? I mean, there's things that's happening right now that they can speak upon without even that the president would jump upon. It's right up in his alley. He would love to say, well, you're Tony, go say Detroit, I did it. You're Tony, do that, I did it. There's things that they could have brought to him. Like I said, when the homosexuals wanted laws to pass, they brought it to them. When the immigrants wanted laws passed, they brought it to them. When the women wanted laws passed, they brought them to them. But when there's issues being like Detroit, like the Voting Rights Act, when things get knocked down, this is the time for them to say, well, hey, President, could you do this? You know, could you say something? It is as if they're not allowing the president to go down in history as doing something for black people because they have to bring it to him. They have to say, President, we have a bill. So he can sign it. It's as if they're like saying, we're not going to do anything. It's like they're more at a stalemate with him and trying to erase him for doing things out of history. You know, sure, other races and nationalities would say he was the greatest president thing for them, but when your history look back at the African Americans, you'd be like, man, what happened to them? Look at their plight. And I'm saying it's people in Congress. And a whole bunch of stuff. You know, you can say, okay, I want to plant a Chinese. Okay, if China's buying up shit, put a plant in Detroit, Toyota. Fuck it. You know, or put a plant in Cleveland or Chicago, wherever there's high employment. If we got these green jobs, put it in these areas right here. Let me generate some money right here. Anything. You know, I mean, here you go, Mr. President. I'll vote on your budget if I get XYZ. You know, he can't Bobby Rush get $1 million, can't build a Texan. I mean, there's things that blacks should be asking for that's not being detrimental to the country. I'll go and say the Tulsa victim survivors. Those survivors are still here in America. It's only time that a state dropped bombs on some victims, and they should be justly compensated for their banks and everything getting burnt. He can sign that. That ain't getting reparations to everybody. That's taking care of a wrong that was done to some citizens out of this county. It's as if blacks are scared of power. Now, the person we listened to was Ed Brooks. Now, Sean, I'm going to hurt your ears because this woman, Ed Brooks, got to tell young kids. So you're talking about young kids. So
but,
check
Jimmy,
it out.
All of these things that you're mentioning, they're not new. These things didn't just happen since President Obama was elected. These things have been going on throughout the century.
So would you expect that if we got a black man, they should stop? Dana? If it's not new, don't you expect some crime should stop?
It should have stopped a long time ago.
We
got an African American president.
Dana, it should stop.
All of a sudden, the plight of the black people falls on him. It's not like that.
Well,
we're in a disparaging state in this United States, and we have been, and we will continue to be, because there
Dana,
is
it fell on every president. It fell on George
more
Bush.
Fell
on every president. President had to do something for blacks, whether they liked it or not. Let's go back. Lyndon Johnson, damn, I hate to sign this for the South. I got to sign it. I don't want to do it. Nixon, I'm going to give Urban League $100 million. He ain't got to pay it back. Ronald Reagan, I got to go in there and sign this Martin Luther King holiday. George Washington, George Bush, man, this one dude died. I got to give him somebody. Let me give him a black. I mean, they always had to do something to black America. All presidents had to do something because we were part of America, and they took care of all parts of their constituency. And this time, this constituency is not being taken care of. Even white presidents.
Well, by going Republican, you just making us disappear all the same. Like
no,
I said,
no,
you gotta have your, you got to have your own black party. I mean, seriously, man, you can't be.
Because let me tell you something. If all races and nationalities have power on both sides, that's how come they can caucus, because the Spanish got power on both sides. Homosexuals got power on both sides. Women got power on both sides. Blacks,
okay, well,
we got power
caucus.
On one side, the black caucus.
First
we're scared
of work ethic.
Brooks, tell them, Ed Brooks.
I'm a strong believer in the work ethic. I like to tell them what a teacher told me, that there are no shortcuts to glory. And when I use glory, I don't mean the frills and the ruffles. There's no shortcuts to success, whatever that success may be. I'd like to reiterate what I was taught in early on. And I got that not just from my mother, but my grandmother, who used to say, remember your place now. And that disturbed me. And I knew what she was saying and why she was saying it. She was saying it to protect me also. And that's why I've said, particularly the young black children, your place is anywhere you want it to be. It's left up to you. You make that decision. to young politicians, I want to make a plea for elective office. Seek power. There's nothing wrong with power if it's used wisely and used rightly. Power is essential. Power is what gets things going, and it can be used for good as well as for evil. Some people think of power, the powerful person as being evil. I think it's the powerful person as being good.
And now again, I played that because I'm saying that black politicians are scared to use their power. If right now you have opportunity with the black president in there to use your...
I mean, listen, they're a politician. They're not a king, all right? They already come in operating by limited rules. They're like managers of money. They have no power, really.
Again,
you
can say that, but Sean, yes. Listen, say Detroit. Look at Detroit. That's a Democratic city. All Democrats. And they're allowed to go down. They're allowing dogs to run rampant in their town. They're not demanding for resources to come clean that up. They're allowing it to happen.
Like I said, the politicians are very limited. It's what they're operating off what monies, the funds they get from from the government. And they have to play around with that. Right? Because that's all a politician do. They're basically a manager of money. Nothing else. They're not kings. Like I said, they don't make rules. They operate with a certain amount of guidelines, man. They can't. They may.
Make the rules. That's
they
what the
what?
Guidelines do. They make the rules you follow. That's what they do. And
they make a lot of noise.
They change the rules and make the rules just. They make the
rules. As long as I know from my understanding, my eyesight, all they do is make a lot of noise. That's all politicians do is make a lot of noise. They really get things changed.
Make the rules to the game. Politicians get things done. They're the reason why talking on the phone right now. They're the reason why you're free. They're the reason why you go eat at a restaurant.
I'm not free. I have to go to work every day. I'm not free.
Well,
that's
all
not free.
What's a
limitation, dude.
You're
free to go to work. Go ahead.
You're wrong. You're right. You never ain't free or wrong because you trespass somebody else's stuff. You're always correct. So your freedom has always been limited to what's land start being bought up and owned. So you can always say that. And I ain't going to argue on that point. You want to play some manic games.
My question is this. America's a superpower. How is it that we're a superpower and England money is worth more than ours? Britain's money is worth more than ours. And they don't work as hard as us.
40 years ago, if a cop hits you, now a cop hits you, you can get $1 million. Right now. 40 years ago, little white man call you nigger. Ain't nothing. Now, little white man call you nigger. Told something, and you get paid for it. So I don't know what you're looking at. Don't know what you're talking about.
The system is falling. The system is falling, and we're a superpower. How is it that we're a superpower and things? And then we owe money to China. How is it that we're a superpower? Somebody is presiding over nothing. These small arguments are going nowhere. I mean, something is happening on a larger scale. And
who's feeding China?
Huh?
Who's trying to get their wheat and meat from and their grain from? Who's feeding China? Who's feeding China? How many people are China got over there?
I don't know.
And
now
that all those factories are over there. And that food is over there. And there's
a
farm and agricultural land over there. Who's feeding China, Sean?
I don't know. They send us a lot of stuff over here from China. I don't know. They get stuff from Africa. I know China supplies
the
damn world.
We send the grain and the meat, and we send them out. That's why the farm bill is up, because we're not paying farmers to grow. We're paying farmers to send that stuff over to China because they ain't got no food over there. We feeding China home.
Okay.
I mean, look. Check and see how many American farmers... Check and see how many American farmers got their crop going to China because they can't be fed. We can cut China food supply off right now by torching our farms. I'm just saying. Everything is united and works in one. If China want to roll the debt, China in the end, people in China are going to say they're going to want more money and they're going to want the good life.
I want to know...
Is this
in
real
China,
that
it's called,
if we renege on China, China gets to take us over because we owe them?
Well, listen,
is that true?
No, you can't see it. Listen.
Let's start talking on some white people stuff, some international stuff. Let's stop taking all this.
If we
renege on China, do they get to take over this country?
Okay.
Is that true? That
no.
Obama signed that bill. That Obama signed that something like that.
What's okay? I'm gonna let you go your fear factor on.
No, because this is international. We arguing on some local stuff, and it's like this local stuff is nothing's ever happening. I mean, Detroit is going down and all this. I mean, Chicago's next. And, I mean, these are local. We're still arguing about we're black in this room. I mean, dude, there's something major going on here. What?
Let's play the game here. Hey, China's a what? Communist is a communist country. Do you agree?
I haven't been to China. Go ahead. The people seem kind of happy over there. Go ahead.
Are they capitalists or are they communists?
I mean, we would say they're communists, but then again, I haven't been over China. That we owe China. So, go ahead.
Good. Keep that in your mind. Now, if China's a communist country, are they doing capitalistic practices?
Yeah.
Okay, then. Now, the war with Russia is a capitalist communist war, and we broke the Iron Curtain. And now they're capitalists now. China's next. Sometimes you got to look at the war strategies, homie. I mean, we've been at war with North Korea since Truman, homie. That's a communist country. We can't go see Cuba. Why? It's a communist country. You went with International Sean, you used to play the game on some scare, hair on fire.
Well, it's true.
It's about strategy. It's about communist and capitalistic because we're a capitalist city, country, and nation. And our enemy is a communist. It's been for, I don't know how long, Sean. How long we been at war with the communists, Sean? Do you know, Sean? Let's be real. You want to be international, Sean, or you just want to play?
I don't know. Go ahead. What you're saying.
Or it's dead, everybody. Or they'll come get, oh, you don't know we had a war with cap. I mean, hey, pretty soon those workers in China are going to say, I don't want to get paid 5 cents for a shoe no more. Hold on.
Well, all I know is I think they're going to start implanting Americans with the chip in about 5 to 10 years. I seen that in the newspaper. So that was a major concern to me.
Every country, rebellion would hit China because China workers would start rebellion because they want more money and they would go on strike. And if they go on strike, that would have adverse effect to their economy. It's a war game, Sean. They want to act communistic and be for the people, but the people ain't working. And the people got internet now, and they can see what's going on. They want bling bling. They want cars, too. They want that stuff now. And then now what they're going to do to their people, what the Chinese people going to do when they want that stuff, Sean? They're going to come fight off America or they're going to go to their government, Sean? You tell me. We're going national. So what do you mean, tell me, China going to be worried about owning American money or their citizens who want more than 5 cents a shoe, Sean? Tell me, please.
I don't know. You're speaking so fast and give me time to think. You want me to answer a question without even thoroughly thinking it out?
Call me tomorrow, let me know, because hair on fire. It's a communistic, capitalistic war we at. This is Jimmy Underground Radio Network, and I ain't got no music to play, so...
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, everybody. I'll see y'all tomorrow. Love you, Dana. Love you, Ebony. See you guys tomorrow.
Getting late in the studio. On
Twitter.
Good night,
Jimmy.
Good
night,
Sean.
I guess this is what it's like to be a rapper tonight.
Shout out to Herb again for making the beat.